Hello and welcome to Checkup Chat with Evergreen Health. A breast cancer diagnosis can be incredibly overwhelming at first, but we want to discuss today understanding your breast cancer diagnosis and what it means to you and your loved ones. Joining us for this critical conversation are oncology nurse navigator at Evergreen Health Cancer Care, Melanie Calderwood, and medical director and physician at Evergreen Health Cancer Care, Dr. Michael Hunter. Dr. Hunter, I'll start with you. Tell us about the different kinds of breast cancer that someone can get diagnosed. Can you walk us through the different types and stages that would be important to know?
Yeah, so I'll begin by saying that the pathology is really critical to everything in terms of prognosis, whether it's management, whether it's follow-up. What the pathologist tells us is really central to care. And so I think breast cancer can conveniently be divided into two categories. The first would be non-invasive breast cancer. Think of things like ductal carcinoma in situ meaning remaining in place. We call this stage zero. Alternatively, the majority of patients will have what's called invasive cancer. About 80% will have invasive cancer. And the way I think about it is that the cancer starts within the milk duct or the lobule where breast milk is produced, and then over time can invade through the wall. When it invades through the wall, we call it invasive. If it invades through the wall of the duct, it's invasive ductal cancer. If it invades through the wall of the lobule, it's invasive lobular carcinoma. So we have two categories of invasive breast cancer, either ductal or lobular. Once we have that information, then the pathologist will tell us more about the biology, the fingerprint, the personality of the cancer. And so there are four key elements to determining the personality of the cancer. First would be the estrogen receptors. These are antennae inside of the cell that are receiving signals from estrogen. Most people have them, but some don't. If we have them, we call it estrogen receptor positive. The second would be progesterone receptors, also inside of the cell. I think of them as attached to the estrogen receptors, so it's kind of a chain. If you have them, progesterone receptor positive. If you don't, progesterone receptor or PR negative. On the outside of the cell, we have something called HER, H-E-R. And there's HER 1, 2, 3, and 4 sticking out like antennae outside of the cell. 20% of folks will have too many HER2. You and I have 10,000. These patients will have 1 to 3 million. And it sends a signal inside of the cell to say grow and divide. And then finally, we're looking at the grade. This is a measure under the microscope of simply how aggressive do the cells look. So in summary, we start out with two categories, non-invasive or invasive. Within the invasive category, we have ductal or lobular, and then we want to know its personality. What are the estrogen receptors? What are the progesterone receptors? How about HER2? And finally, grade.
Thank you so much, Doctor. And Melanie, what would be the next steps after receiving a breast cancer diagnosis? How does Evergreen Health and the Breast Center prepare someone for their journey?
Well, most of our patients come from the breast center after a screening mammogram. So after they get a diagnosis of breast cancer, the breast center will schedule their initial appointments, usually surgery, sometimes radiation oncology, and their MRI. Then we will meet with them either before or after the MRI to explain who we are and what we do, explain our role, what services we have. Our department also has dietitians and social workers, how to contact us either by phone or by email. We have some teaching materials we give them, and we try to stress with them that we're available anytime for any questions or concerns they might have. We can answer general questions about breast cancer treatment, but of course the specific information comes from the physicians. Some patients will contact us after they've been diagnosed at another facility but want to be treated here at Evergreen, either because people have suggested Evergreen or they live in the area. They can either enter our system by calling the surgery clinic directly. The surgery clinic then calls us, let us know who they are, how to get in touch with them. And then we arrange a time to meet with them, usually after one of their appointments, to go over our teaching material and so forth. Sometimes patients call us directly if someone has recommended Evergreen. In that case, we arrange their initial appointments and their MRI, and again, arrange to meet with them to give them our information. We also make appointments when they're needed, either the radiation oncology appointments or the medical oncology appointment, and the timing of those are dictated by the doctors. We do follow the patients throughout treatment and are available for any questions or concerns.
Great. Well, I'll stick with you for a few more, Melanie. Is it a one-and-done thing, or are nurse navigators with you throughout your entire journey?
We're there from the very beginning. They're one of the first people we meet, and we follow them throughout the treatment. We have a way of monitoring where they are in treatment so that we can keep track. And then as they transition to a new phase, we make sure they enter that phase easily. We try to make their appointments, make sure they have all the appointments they need. We also, like I said, we're available for any questions. I've had people call us after they're done with their treatment and have questions. One woman saw a doctor in Arizona where she lived in the winter and had trouble transferring her record. So she called me to help with that. She was maybe 6 months after treatment. So we want to make sure that they understand that we are there for them from the beginning and throughout the treatment, whatever that is. And if they need us afterwards, we're also available for that as well.
Gotcha. Okay. So who else is involved in the treatment process, Melanie? What other doctors or health professionals are part of the team?
There's three main doctors they see: the surgeon, the radiation oncologist, and the medical oncologist. Some patients will also see genetics, either for their own information. Maybe they have someone in their family who has had breast cancer, or sometimes it helps direct their treatment. So we will make sure they also have those appointments if it's needed. The order of the doctors will depend on the treatment. Many patients start with the surgeons. Sometimes we make them appointment with the radiation oncologist as well initially, because radiation oncologist physicians are excellent job of putting everything together for the patient and taking time to answer all their questions. And many patients have told us that they feel a lot better after talking to Dr. Hunter and his colleagues. I think it's a lot easier for them when they know that there's a plan. Instead of just being called and saying, you have breast cancer, well, we'll get back to you, they can go to the doctor and radiation oncologist, surgeon, whoever, who will put together the plan for them so they know exactly what's next and what the timing will be. And usually patients feel a lot better after getting that information.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And Melanie, tell us about how nurse navigators like yourself work closely with the oncology doctors. What does that relationship look like?
We work closely with them. We work closely with all of the doctors. Like I said, with medical oncology, we get those appointments for them. So we contact Fred Hutch is called now, let them know a patient needs an appointment, and then the doctors will review the pathology and decide how soon they want to see them, and then we will make the appointment for them and call the patient when the appointment is at the appropriate time. We also are part of a group every week where we call Tumor Board, where all the doctors get together to discuss patients, and navigators are also part of that discussion so that we can help follow through whatever the next treatment plan is.
Thank you, Melanie. And back to you, Dr. Hunter. What treatment options are available for breast cancer, and how should someone decide the best course of action?
Yeah, so I'm going to conveniently divide management into two categories. The first is known as local management. What do we do about the breast and the regional lymph nodes? And the second is systemic therapy. What do we do about the body? So let me address the first, to local regional management first. When a patient comes in with breast cancer, we want to know its stage. So for example, if it's very localized and early, it's typically stage 0 or 1. Patients that have disease confined to the breast and regional lymph nodes are typically candidates for breast conserving management. And what I mean by that is, in the old days, everyone used to have a mastectomy, but now the majority of patients are candidates for a lumpectomy. Selected patients do need a mastectomy, for example, if they have a very large tumor relative to the breast, although we sometimes will use systemic therapy to shrink it, and certainly if they have grossly multicentric disease, that is cancer in multiple quadrants of the breast, then a mastectomy is preferred to a lumpectomy. Once we make the decision about a lumpectomy versus a mastectomy, then we can tell a patient that if you're indeed a candidate for a lumpectomy, we know breast-conserving management has no survival disadvantage. Here's what I mean by that. The big upside to having a lumpectomy is you keep your breast without compromising survival. We have 6 prospective randomized trials, including 2 in the United States and 4 in Europe, that ask this question. If a woman chooses a lumpectomy or a mastectomy, are there any long-term differences in dying of breast cancer or overall survival? And the answer, thankfully, is no. So if you're a candidate for breast-conserving management, we typically prefer it. Selected patients do need a mastectomy. Then the next step is, do you need additional treatment? And so let's start with the lumpectomy group. The vast majority of patients do need radiation therapy. For invasive breast cancer, the omission of radiation therapy is not only associated with a much higher recurrence in the breast, but also a potential loss of survival. And so I think of lumpectomy as typically paired with radiation therapy. Usually sequence lumpectomy 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, radiation therapy. If patients need systemic therapy, such as chemotherapy, that comes before the radiation therapy. On the other hand, if a patient goes on to a mastectomy, the majority do not need radiation therapy. Selected patients do need radiation therapy. For example, if the tumor is more than 5 centimeters, we would have a conversation about radiation therapy. If there's clinically meaningful disease in regional lymph nodes, radiation therapy is typically recommended. And then finally, if the surgical margins are close, that is less than 1 millimeter, then we recommend radiation therapy. So in summary, patients who have a lumpectomy for early disease typically will have radiation therapy because it reduces the risk of it coming back in the breast, and for invasive disease is associated with better survival. For those who have a mastectomy, the vast majority do not need radiation therapy unless we have concerns that they might have residual disease, lymph node involvement, close margins, or a very large tumor relative to the breast size. Finally, I would say this. Systemic therapy is separate from the local therapy question generally. So the way we determine systemic therapy, treating the body, is number one, what is the biology of that cancer? So we know patients that have estrogen receptors typically will hear a recommendation for what we call endocrine therapy, kind of shutting down the estrogen, the food that's driving the growth of the cancer cell. On the other hand, if you have a high risk that it might be elsewhere in the body or high risk of dying of breast cancer, then consideration is given to chemotherapy. What is wonderful about recent advances, though, is that we can really individualize who needs what. So, for example, if you have a tumor in the breast and we wonder, does she need chemotherapy, does she not, many patients will have what we call genomic testing. You may hear terms like oncotype, mammoprint, endopredict. All of these are designed to tell us, one, whether chemotherapy would work at all, and secondly, give us a sense of prognosis. And so in summary, we have local management, mastectomy versus lumpectomy and radiation, and then we have the separate question of systemic management. Do you need pills to block estrogen? Do you need chemotherapy? And if you have those HER2 receptors, do you need anti-HER2 therapy? I'll end by saying that sometimes patients will have chemotherapy before the surgery. We call this neoadjuvant therapy. In an effort to shrink the tumor or to get treatment going very rapidly, then chemotherapy or Herceptin with chemotherapy may be given before the operation.
Great, thank you. And on the other side of the treatment here, doctor, just how important is it to have a support system in your life, such as support groups, resources, a loved one? How do they help you go through this journey?
I'm curious to see what my colleague Melanie is going to add as well. I would say that I'm going to answer in a couple of ways. The first is it is always helpful to have a support system. Some people don't have that support system, and fortunately, we have a team that can kind of embrace them and guide them successfully through care. We start with the consultation when we meet the patient, and it's often helpful to have a second set of ears. My experience is that when you first have a diagnosis, you hear less than half of what the doctor is saying, maybe less than a third of what the doctor is telling you. So having a second set of ears in the room is always helpful. Even though we try to have our consult notes available to patients, it's nice to have other folks in the room hearing the conversation. Secondly, navigating through treatment can be challenging. For example, if you need aggressive chemotherapy, it's very helpful to have a support network around you. Emotionally, the vast majority of patients will have some degree of depression or anxiety or worry or concerns, and so I think support can be helpful with that as well. Let me turn it over to someone who actually knows better than I do.
No, I totally agree.
I'm going to hit my mute button.
No, that was an excellent answer. No, I would just add that we have an excellent group of social workers who are there for whatever the needs of the patient. A lot of them have insurance needs if they're immigrants and they need to get coverage. We have people that can help them with home health, that can help them at home, transportation. We also have something called Cancer Lifeline that is an organization that organizes support groups and classes for cancer patients. We used to have the classes here in the hospital. During the pandemic, it was switched over to Zoom, and I think there's now a combination of those. So when we meet patients, we give them a list from Cancer Lifeline. So if they're interested in any of those classes or support groups, they can access those. But again, we want to let them know that we're here for them for whatever they need, and we'll try to get resources that will help them through this process.
Well, thank you both so much. And as we wrap up, Dr. Hunter, what would you say to someone who may be listening to this podcast, who knows someone close to them just received a breast cancer diagnosis, or maybe they were just diagnosed themselves? What are some words of encouragement?
Yeah, the first is that we've made tremendous strides over the last 40 years in the management of breast cancer, and that's really translated into two things. One is better quality of life. So the vast majority of patients here at Evergreen, about 7 out of 10, will keep their breast even as they have a breast cancer diagnosis. The second is that cure rates are going up. So we've seen consistently about a 1 to 2% rise in cure rates over the last several decades. The third point I would make is that treatment is so much better than it was when I started 30 years ago. The example I gave earlier was that if, for example, we're wondering, do you need chemotherapy or not, we can use genomic testing often to determine, do you need chemotherapy or not? And what that's done is really eliminated chemotherapy from about 40% of people who historically would have gotten it. So in summary, we're better at curing people, but we're doing it with more refinement. We're basically individualizing the care to the patient and her tumor characteristics. And I think that's the big message, is we're curing more folks, we're saving more breasts, and we're making treatment more individualized and safe. We're fortunate in the Pacific Northwest that we have among the highest cure rates in the Seattle area. And our numbers at Evergreen hold up well against any place internationally. So it's kind of one of the highlight programs, I think, of our institution, both in terms of local recurrence. We have a 2% local recurrence rate for those who have breast conservation, and that has not been beaten anywhere. And then the second is, in terms of survival as well, we tend to be above the national averages. So I'm proud to say it's a good place, if you have breast cancer, to be associated with the Northwest, with Seattle in particular, and we're doing great things at Evergreen Health.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both so much for the care and the work you do here at Evergreen Health. Your care at the Halverson Cancer Center is provided by medical experts using state-of-the-art diagnostics and advanced treatment technologies. To learn more, visit evergreenhealth.com/cancer-care. This has been Checkup Chat with Evergreen Health. I'm Caitlin White. Stay well.